Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start in New Orleans. All right, let's resist the temptation to turn Odell Beckham Jr. into a victim today. New Orleans police issued an arrest warrant for the wide receiver after a Superdome security guard filed a simple battery complaint against Beckham. Video captured Beckham slapping the security guard on the butt in the LSU postgame locker room Monday night. The battery complaint seems like a petty overreaction, unless you understand the context. The battery complaint is connected to the massive headache Beckham has caused LSU officials, head coach Ed Orgeron, LSU fans, and the entire SEC. Before slapping the security guard on the butt, Beckham spent the immediate moments after LSU completed its rout of Clemson handing out wads of cash to LSU players on the field. This too was captured on video. On Tuesday, LSU claimed Beckham passed out fake cash. Yesterday, after quarterback Joe Burrow admitted during a podcast interview the money was real, LSU reversed course and acknowledged that it was investigating Beckham's actions. They issued a statement saying, "We are aware of the situation regarding Odell Beckham Jr. interacting with LSU student athletes and others unaffiliated with the team following the championship game Monday night. Initial information suggested the bills that were exchanged were novelty bills. Information and footage reviewed since shows apparent cash may also have been given to LSU student athletes. We were in contact with the NCAA and the SEC immediately upon learning of this situation in which some of our student athletes may have been placed in a compromising position. We are working with our student athletes, the NCAA, and the SEC in order to rectify the situation." All right, today's arrest warrant, in my opinion, is payback for all the trouble Beckham has stirred up for LSU and the SEC. Everybody knows the deal in major college football and basketball. The elite schools and the elite players get hooked up by boosters and alums. Beckham just needlessly put his alma mater in the NCAA crosshairs, all because he wanted to promote OBJ. Beckham epitomizes the virus spreading within sports culture. A growing number of high-profile athletes have abandoned any pretense of being role models in pursuit of being influencers. As I explained earlier this week, there's a significant difference between being a role model and influencer. A role model attempts to model public behavior to be emulated by young people. An influencer's goal is to develop a large following by any means necessary and influence that following into buying commercial products. Walter Payton aspired to be a role model. OBJ aspires to be Kim Kardashian, Lindsay Lohan, and Paris Hilton. He hasn't released his sex tape yet, but it's only a matter of time. He's obsessed with Hey Look At Me stunts that enhance his social media brand. OBJ is a self-serving agent of chaos whose lone mission in life is the promotion of OBJ. He is not alone. Antonio Brown suffers the exact same disease. So does Colin Kaepernick. Is Beckham's form of social media and influencer chaos as bad as Brown's and Cap's? No. Brown is sociopathic and Cap is using police brutality to sell Nikes. But Brown and Cap are no longer on NFL teams. My point on Beckham is his influencer addiction makes him a really bad fit for team sports. Beckham's influence makes it extremely hard to build a winning culture. He's Terrell Owens on social media steroids. Your best player, the player with the most influence in the locker room, can't contradict all the values taught by the coaching staff. Team sports are about sacrificing for the man or woman next to you. They're about elevating the people you work with and subjugating your individual ego for the greater good of the team. Team sports are about shared goals, shared experiences, and shared values. The 100 or so players on that LSU team, the 20 or so coaches, the team of administrators, trainers, and support staff worked all year to win a national championship. While they were doing the work to win a national title, OBJ was helping the Cleveland Browns underachieve and miss the playoffs. Monday night wasn't about Odell Beckham Jr. He strategically hijacked the event and made it about him. It's literally the most selfish act I've seen in sports. I don't blame people in Louisiana for seeking payback. LSU should ban him from its campus, and the Cleveland Browns should dump OBJ and rid their locker room of his influence. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports NFL analyst Mark Schlereth and Bucky Brooks. Marcellus, get us rolling.
Yeah.
What should LSU do about Odell Beckham Jr.?
What should happen in this episode of Dumb and Dumber, which is it's dumb to slap a security guard on his butt, and it's dumber to even bring up criminal charges for that same slap. You should take notice of what the NFL is doing in this approach with AB, which is slow is the way to go. Let something else, let the system, judicial system in AB's case or the NCAA in LSU's case, actually set the ruling before you actually go out there and set the ruling. Remember when you're trying to team build in LSU in this perfect season, would deem everything outside that team, those players, as outside noise. That includes Odell Beckham in this situation right now. That's outside noise. He didn't have impact on the game. He's not a teammate. And these guys are in a world that's going to change if they achieve their goals. The rules will change. Everything that we are now criticizing will turn and flip into being something that is perfectly fine, legal, and ethical. But right now, there's no message that's going to be learned by you being fast to a judgment or penalty on Odell. And it's nothing that these players are going to be able to absorb because they're in a different world than Odell. So just because of those circumstances, I just say pause for the cause.
When this comes to Odell, I do not believe that LSU should disassociate themselves with OBJ. He does need a stern talking to. He has to understand that he can't put LSU in compromising situations with his behavior. And what he did on Monday night of that game, he certainly did that. But he is too valuable to the university, to the football program, as a recruiting tool to completely ostracize him from the program. When you go to these high school football camps and you talk to young wide receivers, OBJ is the guy that they aspire to be. He is the one that they look up to. So you still have to have him around the program. You still want to benefit from his hero status, his icon status, but he has to know that he can't put the bigger brand in jeopardy.
I would say this. If I was LSU, I would have a meeting with Odell Beckham Jr. and the powers that be at LSU and say, if you act like a moron, and that's what you acted like on Monday night, then you're not going to be allowed to be around our program. Mm-hmm. That's the bottom line. We want you to be a part of our program, but if you're going to act like a fool and you've got that kind of, I mean, to me, the premeditated portion of putting a stack of high society in your pocket and traveling around to get yourself your attention, because that's what that is, that to me is wrong. If you want to celebrate with those kids and celebrate a championship, I don't have a problem with you celebrating a championship, but that was celebrating your brand. And I strongly feel that that's what went down there. So I would have to have a conversation with him. If you want to act like an adult, you want to be a great role model, and you want to help these kids get to the next level, I'm all for that. But hey, listen, just because there are problems with the structure of the NCAA, and there are, mm-hmm. there are plenty of problems with that, that does not make what he did right.
Right.
It's not. And so those are the conversations I would have, because I'm with you. Man, you say whatever you want. Kids aspire to him. Kids, I mean, they gravitate
kids
to him,
whatever. Kids aspire to a lot of things.
Well, I understand that. But
a lot of things that aren't good for him. I want to go a cut deeper on why this is serious and why this is the state of Louisiana and people in power. They're taking action against Odell Beckham Jr. You can blame the security guard all you want. It ain't him. This man has put everybody in jeopardy. We all know the deal with big-time elite sports. We know it all the way down to the Mid-American Conference level where I played at. People help these kids in ways that they can. And there are people that really had something to do with that great LSU team and what they accomplished, and they don't want the NCAA nosing around, asking a bunch of questions that may create a trail to them. Because people have gone to jail recently, mm-hmm. over this, the Adidas trial. Prosecutors have used these NCAA rules to come up with some bogus charges to make people felons over violating NCAA amateurism rules. OBJ, in his stupidity, has put a lot of people in jeopardy. And that's why they need to disassociate. He's not bigger than LSU. He's not so important to LSU football that they can't survive without him. They have far more wealthier alums. They have far more people responsible for the recruits and the players that they have. What you don't want to set off is what he has set off. A bunch of NCAA people and the media and everybody else. Well, let's go through LSU with a fine-tooth comb. There are people in power there in Louisiana that invested in this team and in this program that don't want any parts of that. And this dude, we can't just look the other way because this dude is this irresponsible, this self-absorbed, this stupid.
Yeah, shame on you, OBJ, for your selfishness, for now shining the light on all the illegalities that we're actually committing down here right now. We just want to keep the status quo, which is, hey, OBJ, you're bringing the feds down here. Look, OBJ is guilty of this. As we say in the locker room, he was on one. He got lost in the sauce. Whatever he was doing, he went way to the nth degree. But it's funny when we talk about him and his self-serving nature and attention-seeking that not a lot of headlines are being made of him equipping the entire team with headphones the legal way, the right way. He sent out Beats by Dre's $350 values to everybody LSU affiliated. And then he got in the moment and realized they were doing something that he's never seen before, and that's his family. And he went overboard. Guilty, guilty, guilty. But this whole notion that OBJ is going to be held to a standard that people in normal society are not going to be held to, this whole role model versus influencers, that's absurd. Because we used to say yesterday's athletes were role models. They were just mislabeled. They were just underserved and underpaid influencers at the time that didn't have the platform properly like OBJ does right now. OBJ shouldn't be held to any higher standard than we are, than your neighbors are. And it's funny when we see an athlete get in trouble, we blow it up out of proportion. Even though all the statistics say that your neighbor or you is four times more criminal than any pro athlete ever
this
is.
This isn't about criminality, well, Marcellus. We're talking this about, is about LSU.
Didn't he just get charged?
Again, that's a small detail. This man has caused his university a major headache. They work in the NCAA system, whether we like it or not. I've got years invested in pointing out the fraudulence and doing major journalism on the fraudulence of amateurism. I'm against amateurism. This ain't the way to go about it.
I didn't say it was.
This is an effect.
I didn't say it was.
Nobody should ever want to be this kind of a headache to their alma mater or their football team. And you can't, Ed Orgeron, none of the people involved with LSU that actually put the work in are happy today. That we're talking about OBJ, that we're talking about NCAA investigation, that they're doing an investigation. Who wants this? No, look, nobody does.
No, look.
So, and it's all in pursuit of being an influencer.
Okay, since I thought you were going to go, Bucky. You're making this bigger than it is right now. A headache can go away. This situation can go away. You don't know what the ruling is. Right now, there's a criminal charge. If I'm OBJ, that's a headache for me. That's a major thing to deal with. It could be 6 months of jail for what OBJ was charged with and a $1,000 fine. What LSU is investigating could come back to be a slap on the wrist. Then what's the conversation? We don't know that, but we have to go through that process. That's why I started off my argument saying slow play the situation.
But let's say it's a slap on the wrist, that's the penalty. I don't want to slap on the wrist because OBJ did something stupid. I don't want to be holding a bunch of meetings, meeting with NCAA investigators because OBJ did something stupid that everybody knows you don't do. If he had done something unintentionally, I would get it.
Here's the deal for me. Like, I had talked about this. I got a lot of pushback about taking the shine off the kids who put in the work, off the coaches who put in the work. You take off the shine and you make it about you. And people like those kids were celebrating with him. That's fine. You're still getting shine to you. But now you've put shine to the organization, to LSU. We should be talking about how great a football team this was.
We can't.
How
still,
great.
You know,
oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. I know. We have that choice. But you know what's in the news cycle?
Yeah, and we didn't write the news cycle.
Right.
Oh, we don't?
He didn't.
Well, it's interesting what we choose to be focused on in the news cycle.
Right. You're 100%, you're 100% right on that.
Yeah.
But you know what? When it's $100 bills that you know that's not appropriate, and then it's a slap on the butt of a security guard. Like, I don't care if it's a security guard or police officer. I don't care who it is. you're not allowed to put your hands on people. And we did things in a locker room environment, like we did things in a locker room environment that completely inappropriate. Yeah. All of us did, because yeah. that's the locker room environment. But you know what? When I walk out of that locker room environment, I don't take it to the grocery store with me. I don't.
Yeah.
Because I know better. But no, so I'm just saying, be an adult. And
he does wasn't have to be an adult. Like, look, there's a level of immaturity that is around OBJ that none of us would appreciate. Right. And I would say, though, LSU can't necessarily have it both ways. They can't celebrate one of the biggest football stars, celebrities that the program has produced, and then have him cast to the side. What he did was stupid and irresponsible. Mm-hmm. Everyone can sit here and admit that.
Yes.
However, LSU cannot completely separate themselves from it because they've also benefited from his stardom.
No,
they benefited from his relationship right. with Nike. As you talked about him outfitting them with Beats, they also wore OBJ cleats that night.
And they egged him on to speak. He's sitting there like, I don't want to talk. Players saying, coach is basically forcing him to speak. Like, you want the shine, but sometimes it's too bright and it goes too far.
It's no different than, like, the Police Athletic League down in Hollywood, Florida, wanted the donation from AB until the moment they didn't. Until they was like, hey, this ain't worth the headache, this ain't worth the trouble. LSU has that right with OBJ. We're talking about something very simple. I don't know what this, I don't have kids, y'all do. Whatever the simplest instruction is for your kids, and then they violate it. And you just like, are you kidding me? I just told you don't do that, and you did. It was that simple. This man is an adult. He knew exactly what he was doing. He was there to promote OBJ, and he doesn't care that, again, as LSU has stated, put our players in a compromised position. Who does that? And who defends that? And again, they don't want it. It's a headache. I just couldn't imagine me doing something intentionally to hurt my alma mater, my high school or college, my church, people that have taken care of me and that I'm a part of their brand or whatever. I just couldn't imagine doing something that intentional to promote myself that hurts them. This is the most selfish act I've seen in sports. And if he's so removed from reality and so unpredictable, if I'm LSU, I take a step back from OBJ.
What does a step back mean? Materialize that. What do you mean?
I think, OBJ, we don't want you on our sidelines. We don't want you in practice. You don't have to give us no more money. Woo. We're good, OBJ. Thanks for being around. We'll check back with you a year from now. Look, I just thought
this violation here.
Absolutely.
You started this by saying you don't have kids, and I think you realize when you have kids, it's not that simple. You don't just say, you violated, okay, here's penalty, let's move on. There's a self-correction. There's a maturation, growing pains that occur through any situation, even in violation. You don't sit there and stay black
and
white with
situations. He's nearly 30 years old, and we keep seeing a pattern of, hey, look at me.
LSU has seen a pattern? Or are you saying you following OBJ?
Everybody sees the pattern with OBJ and the hey, look at me antics. Watch him play football.
So do the Patriots distance themselves from Edelman? PEDs, leading the league in drops, jumping on cars when you're lit. It's bye. Or you think they're going to say, you know let's talk through this
again,
process, right?
As it goes to football, it goes to Edelman, no one can argue, is not part of a winning culture. People can make that argument about OBJ. And so as it relates to the Browns or the Patriots or whatever, it's about, do you contribute to a winning culture? People can make the argument, Edelman does, OBJ doesn't. Mm. As it relates to wherever did Edelman play at Kent State? Yeah. Is he the quarterback? Yeah. That played at Kent State. He hasn't done anything to put Kent State in a bad light.
You said any organization. He's certainly done it to the New England Patriots on and off the field of late. So here's my thing. When you look at these violations, I'm not saying he's not wrong. OBJ is wrong. I'm just arguing a different severity of penalty because I have to weigh the positives with the negatives. I'm not throwing out the baby with the bathwater.
Everybody has to do taxes, and yet not everybody feels comfortable doing taxes, which doesn't seem right, especially when you consider all the amazing things these same people accomplish every day of their lives. TurboTax believes that, with the right tools and encouragement, people can be good at anything, yes, even taxes. And to help people feel more comfortable with the tax process, TurboTax Live gives you personal access to experienced CPAs and EAs who are there for you even on nights and weekends. and they're happy to go through your return with you line by line to double check that you've done everything right, so you can be sure to get your best possible refund and feel 100% confident in your taxes. TurboTax. All people are tax people.
Bucky Brooks is back with us. We're joined by former NFL head coach Jeff Fisher. Time for a big story. Sponsored by KFC's $3 Famous Bowl. Try it spicy. Mm. All right, let's move to Antonio Brown, who made waves this week posting a profane and racist tirade against police and the mother of his children on Instagram. The backlash has continued today with Brown's agent Drew Rosenhaus and Brown's attorney both reportedly terminating their relationship with the receiver. All right, do we think Drew Rosenhaus's decision, think this will help Antonio Brown?
No, unfortunately, no. A lot of times players even get lost in this, that the agents work for the players. So basically, if your employee comes up to you and quits, does that really change you? Have you hit rock bottom? Is that now a new moment of clarity? I think this is a necessary step in terms of the NFL saying you're going to be employed by us, you need to get help. But when your agent dismisses you conditionally, I don't think that anything in your reality changes, because one, the mindset is I could get another agent, but two, this isn't the rock bottom. This isn't the point where we're going to see a difference in behavior from AB. So I say no.
Look, man, I think it hurts him because he needs an advocate. I think AB needs an advocate. If he has any opportunity to get into the National Football League, he's going to have someone that can have those hard conversations with executives that he can't have. Someone is going to have to kind of smooth the path to give him an opportunity to get back into the league. Without an agent, without counsel, he doesn't have that opportunity. He can't speak for himself. We have seen on the IG post and all the other stuff, he doesn't represent himself very well. So he needs someone who can be that advocate, and without Rosenhaus or any other representative.
Let me ask you this, though, Bucky. Is getting back into the NFL the help that AB needs?
No, he needs some serious help. He needs serious help.
So does this move help there? Because that's why Rosenhaus is stepping away.
No, see, but I take a different issue with Rosenhaus stepping away, because, like, when we talk about family and the agent comes into your house and he talks about, I'm going to be there for you, I'm going to help you accomplish all these dreams, what I'm seeing from the outside, it appears as soon as AB can't do anything for me, I'm stepping off. If Drew was really an advocate for AB, he would try and ensure that he got the help before he even worried about the league. And so I'm more worried about him jumping off right now, because it doesn't appear to me that he really cares for his client.
See, you know, Drew Rosenhaus has been through it over the years. I mean, he has been front and center with a lot of, I don't want to say issues or some things that have come up with respect to his clients. But right now, as you say, the business side is over. Okay, there's nothing for Drew. There's no way Drew's going to benefit from anything in his mind. So the business relationship's over. But what about that other relationship, going in the living room, taking care of your client? That's over as well. So this may be what AB needed. But I think, and I hope you guys agree with me, there's more to this than that. This is a mental health issue.
Yeah, sure. Definitely.
Okay, the last time I was here, we were talking about his feet were burned because of cryotherapy. And you remember all the stuff that led up to that, and then after that, and then the New England. And then this is a mental health issue. And Drew would probably argue that he is a mental health therapist and probably, I would say, so inclined to handle that because of his experience. But this needs to go to the professional, and this kid needs some help.
Jeff, I think you make a good point in terms of Drew Rosenhaus, I think, was Terrell Owens' agent when Terrell Owens was involved in a lot of high-profile incidents. And that's what I think is so fascinating here, is I don't think I remember Drew Rosenhaus stepping away from a client in this kind of trouble. And that's why I don't think it's going to be effective, but I do think he's trying to shake up someone who's having perhaps mental issues, perhaps chemical self-medicating issues. I don't know. But if you look at his behavior, it's not the behavior of a rational person. And so I think Drew Rosenhaus would argue, and I've been a critic of Drew Rosenhaus, but I'm going to defend him. I think he is trying to pull the rug out from underneath Antonio to get him to hit rock bottom so that he is open to somebody coming in and helping him with his mental or chemical issues?
I'm not believing it. I think it's disingenuous. Let's just be real about it. He said, I'm not representing you conditionally. You need to go get help conditionally. Drew represented him all the way through, even in November when he had a workout with Seattle, even in December when he went to New Orleans and kicked the tires. And you're trying to tell me that AB today is in a different place in assessment than he was just a month ago? Not for me. He did another thing for a video that gave us more ammunition, but it didn't change what I knew that AB needed, which was some mental health. Knew that in November, knew that in December. Drew, you knew it better than I did because you're with him. So it's interesting that conditional basically means get help. And once you get help, you probably get back in the league. And then you can give me some of that money. Wait a minute. What are you here for in fullness if you're my agent? I understand you're going to get your 3%, your 1% if I'm really top tier. But this timing, as you said, Bucky, really kind of rubs me the wrong way because it means that he doesn't completely care about AB the person.
This is an issue. I had the conversation with Chris Long in the last 10 days with respect to mental health. Who's gonna take the position? Who's gonna be the resource? Where are you gonna go? You gonna go to the Players Association? They're not gonna touch it. They're not gonna help it. Okay, you gonna go to the Management Council and the NFL and the clubs? They're not gonna touch it. I know that. I've been around this business for a long, long time. Mental health is a neglected aspect, especially as it relates to former players that need it. But it's neglected, and no one wants to touch it, and there's a need for it. And again, if Antonio's sitting out there, I'm not saying that you got problems. I'm just saying that all things are pointing to the fact that maybe you do need to sit down and talk to somebody that knows what they're talking about, because there's issues here. And if you're that great of a player, believe me, the National Football League and agents and the Players Association, they'll look past it. But no one's looking past this right now. So maybe this is the step that this sport and the industry needs to take a move for. Because the last segment you did about the LSU stuff and Odell, I mean, unfortunately, these are stories. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what's captivating your time. I thought before I walked up here, I go, you know what? Excerpts from what you guys just talked about so eloquently with respect to LSU and Odell are going to be shown to players in next year's training camp of how not to do things and why, because your actions are going to create these problems and we're trying to help you. And so they're just not resources out there to help.
And so in saying all of that, like we talk about resources and him needing help, I would just like to think that your agent, the guy who has sat in your home and did through all the recruiting process that we had to deal with when it came to picking an agent, that at some point he would have that hard conversation and he would drag AB somewhere where he could get some help and attention, as opposed to stepping away from it and leaving him to fend for himself.
But Bucky, I think, and just having some, I don't want to put my family business out here on the street, but again, when you start dealing with these issues, man, people are hard to corral.
Yeah.
Real hard to corral. And then when you, and again, you talking about for family. Mama, daddy can't corral them. Uncles, aunties, grandmama can't corral. An agent? I mean, and so, and I understand that, you know, he's made a lot of money with AB, but I and again, I've been a critic of Drew Rosenhaus, a harsh critic. I'm not a big fan. But I think what he may be trying to do here is, again, it's like he's tried everything else. He's probably tried to drag him. And so maybe he's saying, AB, oh, you want to get back in football? Well, I'm not going to help you until you correct these issues here mentally, because I'm more concerned about you as a human being than I am a football player. So let me be part of the process of removing football away, because I'm your conduit to get back into the NFL. I'm going to take that away, because you need to focus on AB. And I think that's a reasonable conclusion for somebody that watched that video of him outside his house talking that way in front of his young kids, to his baby mamas, to their mother, and to that police force. I'm not sure if I wouldn't have reached the same conclusion as Drew Rosenhaus.
I mean, look, AB is bad for business right now. Let's just be real for about sure. that. And Drew Rosenhaus is taking the league of the Hollywood Powell Athletic League and saying, let me disassociate as well. Because either I say, if I'm Drew Rosenhaus, I'm taking you to get help, or we don't need to work together ever again. Because guess what, Drew? He came from Roc Nation to you. So Drew knows the whole scope of this conditional, like, go fix yourself, come back, and now you're a football player again. We work together again, forgetting about the player. Love your point, Coach. Athletes take so much care of their physical health and totally neglect their mental health. And there are resources, but just like all resources, it's a two-way street. You have to go out and reach for it, and usually it's there to receive.
We're joined now by former NFL offensive lineman Rich Orenberger. All right, let's move to Kansas City, where the Chiefs host the Titans in the AFC Championship game Sunday. Tennessee has been rolling and just shut down Lamar Jackson, but now they're up against the most explosive offense in the league, and Tyreek Hill sounds pretty confident that the Chiefs receivers can't be stopped.
Well, I feel like nobody in NFL can guard any of us. I mean, and that's no disrespect to nobody. That's just the confidence that I got. I mean, and myself and just the wideouts I got around me, including the tight ends and the running backs. I feel like no DB unit, no secondary unit, no linebacker or any defense can guard any of us. So man-to-man is just easy for us to beat. And if you just allow us to just run through zones, it's even easier. So
you like that?
Wow.
Got a problem with Tyreek Hill saying this?
I love this. One, you can't say anything to a team that's about to play in the AFC Championship game to motivate them more. It has nowhere to land. No bulletin board material. This has no place to land in their psyche as they're already fully motivated. Now, I love the fact that he's actually speaking in truth and matter of fact. He's like, look, when we played these dudes last time, I had a career high in catches, a season high in yards. And if you look at our group as a collective, they don't match up. Now, confidence shouldn't wane, even if they go out there and don't live up to those expectations. Your confidence doesn't waver based on just individual results. He's just saying, in general, I'm looking at that group. I'm looking at our group. Our group is better than them.
I love the confidence. I'll tell you what I love about this. He was talking about his group. He wasn't just talking about himself. He was talking, there was we, there was us. And I appreciate that side of it. I also appreciate the confidence, but you can know that and not exude it. You don't have to say this out loud. You could all quietly in your room know how talented you are because you took a 24-point deficit in the first quarter of a game and had a lead by half. Like, we get it. You guys are talented. You are physical and you are fast on the outside. You get open. You create separation. Nothing more needs to be said. Here's what I don't like about it. Some of it's not factually true.
Let's go.
So when you look at their last bunch of games, Patrick Mahomes healthy, and you look at the Oakland Raiders passing yards that they put up against that team, it was under 200. It was under 200 one of the final two games against the Chargers. It was under 200 against the Patriots. I mean, yeah, you put over 300 on the Houston Texans, but if nobody can cover you, and you're not really knocking the doors off of all of these competitors down the stretch of the season, then what were they doing? I think they were covering you, Tyreek. I think they were covering you, Mecole Hardman, Watkins, Kelsey. And by the way, Kelsey has been limping around at practice this week, so yeah, there are some issues.
I don't like it just because I'm a paranoid Chiefs fan and I know the history of the Chiefs and all the things that can go wrong. But the other thing, it sounds exactly like last week Earl Thomas talked about the Patriots. They weren't interested in tackling Derrick Henry. That won't be our problem. Derrick Henry put 200 on him. This, to me, is cut from that same cloth, man. There was no reason for him to say it because most sports fans believe what Tyreek Hill said. Most broadcasters believe, like, man, this offense is unstoppable. These weapons are unstoppable. Can't play man, can't play zone. I just think what he's helped is sharpen their focus and preparation this week. Is it extra motivation? No, I do think it's extra focus and preparation and a belief in the system that they're going to go out. I'm not going to be embarrassed by this group of wide receivers and weapons.
Yeah, I mean, I'm different. Like, I'm outspoken. I know that they're independent actions, what I say versus what I actually do on the field. They're not connected. We can grab storyline. We could find commonality between the guys who are predicted wrong. And we can also do that for the guys who are predicted correctly. I'm looking at it like, if you're prepared, you're never scared. I went into games before talking, barking, barking, bawled. Also went out there barking, 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 got hummed, hemmed, left out to dry, right?
Whoops.
Whoop. And then you can go out there and say, oh, I'm not going to say a word. That doesn't mean you're going to play well. Like, I remember we had a guy in our locker room, and I'm going to leave his name out of here, wore paint, two smelling salts in the nostrils. Oh, don't speak to me. Go out there, get busted in the head. Sorry as hell.
Isn't about how Tyreek Hill's going to play. Tyreek Hill's going to play his game. Yeah. It's about maybe did he sharpen the focus, the resolve, and the effort in some way that Tennessee's going to put out.
I think the 53rd man on Tennessee is prepared this week.
Oh, yeah. No, look,
even this week.
Right, everybody's
prepared. We got to move, Rich.
Okay.
Darnell.
Damn, that's cold.
We just hit the AFC Championship. What's up with the NFC? Is there a Super 6 this weekend for the Packers 49ers?
Yes, sir, it is. And before the game kicks off on Sunday, be sure to download the Fox Sports Super 6. Have them play for free for your chance to win Terry Bradshaw's $25,000. All right, guys, one of the questions is, how many combined passing touchdowns will the 49ers and Packers throw? Whitlock, Marcellus, what you got?
I can't get this right. I was off last week. I said 5. They only had 3. I'm going down to 4. 2 for Rodgers and 2 for Jimmy G.
And I'm going 3. 2 Jimmy G, 1 for Aaron Rodgers. Mm.
Mark Schlereth and Rich Orenberger are back. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We saw some cool moments over the weekend when Jimmy Johnson and Bill Cowher finding out they had been named to the Hall Centennial class. Well, former Cowboys receiver Drew Pearson was hoping for a similar moment and had some cameras around when the rest of the class was being announced. Only problem is he didn't make it. Take a look.
They broke my heart. They broke my heart. And they did it like this. They strung it out like this. I'm sorry.
I want to ask you guys, what's your reaction to this video?
And I've always felt like the NFL needs to go to a policy of you got 10 years to make it into the Hall of Fame after you're eligible. If you don't make it in 10 years, you're taken off the ballot. The pain ends. This guy's 70 years old. He's been waiting 30 years. Hall of it should have been over with 20 years ago.
Let me answer that first. I disagree with capping it because what do you always say, Mark? People always talk about minor surgery. That's something you say when it's not on you.
When it's on somebody else, right?
It sounds great for us to sit up here and say cap it. But if I'm Drew Pearson, don't you cap it. As long as I have a breath of life, I want an opportunity. But to me, this was sad to watch. This was sad because Grandma said, don't let them steal your joy. And right now, they have his happiness hostage because he's still waiting. And not just waiting, but so invested. And I understand why. You're the only member of the 1970s All-Decade team not in the Hall of Fame. But don't forget, it's an accolade. It's a subjective vote that is not looking directly at the numbers. They're going deeper into some contributions. And a lot of the voters have Dallas connections. So you can't even say the bias. This is a tough situation to watch a man, especially with such an accomplished career.
30 years.
Waiting for just one moment to put the cherry on top.
I'd agree with that. You can't cap it because a good friend of mine by the name of Jerry Kramer, one of the greatest of all time out of the University of Idaho, just got in, a year ago, and he was in his 80s. And everybody, when you said Jerry Kramer, they just assumed. They saw the block in the championship game against the Dallas Cowboys in the free, in the Frozen Bowl type of thing, right? And everybody assumed he was in, and he didn't get in until a year ago.
What they say about great movies, Mark?
What's that?
You wouldn't believe what was on the cutting room floor.
Yeah.
That's what makes it great. Things that get left out make the people that actually get in even
listen,
better.
It was sad for me. It was sad for me to watch that. But listen, there are plenty of guys just like Drew Pearson. And one of those guys, Randy Gradishar. 7-time Pro Bowler, 6-time All-Pro. Yeah. When I'm growing up, I'm watching Jack Lambert and Randy Gradishar, and those are the two greatest middle linebackers in the history. And I happen to believe of that time of the 70s. And they were both parts of great defenses. Think about this.
Orange
now, crush. The Doomsday defense, there's Hall of Famers in it.
Yeah.
The Steel Curtain defense, there's Hall of Famers in it. The Purple People Eaters, there's Hall of Famers in it. Mm. The Orange Crush defense, there's not one Hall of Famer from the Orange Crush defense in the Hall of Fame. That's a travesty.
This is a really tight aperture that we put on these situations because it's one man's emotions and his tears. But if you widen this out and you really look at what we're talking about, why does Drew Pearson needs a bunch of writers and broadcasters and people affiliated with the Hall to tell him he's great? Drew, you're great. You're great. We all know it. We appreciate your contributions to the game.
Rich.
It's not enough for some, but I'm telling you.
That gold jacket they put on you represents gold. They might as well put dollar signs on it.
Yeah.
Again, there's a lot of guys. The reason why so a lot of guys are desperate, it's a money-making vehicle.
I
autograph
understand.
Circuit, brother. It changes your life, definitely. But you know what? I'm not going Ocho Cinco route where you just make up your own jacket. But damn it, wear it. Like, you don't have to have the actual physical jacket to wear that success that you're talking about. And that's what's disturbing right now. I understand he's waiting at the bus stop. At a certain point, get up and walk a little. Like, don't just sit there waiting for them to come to you. You're right about the monetary rewards, but still, it just seems like it's even deeper than that.
Well, look, I do think it's deeper, but, and again, I'm a, people don't like me because I say things like this. Drew Pearson, not a Hall of Famer.
Oh, okay, let's go.
Harold Carmichael, not a Hall of Famer. I could rattle off a few other.
Cliff Branch didn't make it either in this one.
Yeah, there's
four-time, you know, four-time All-Pro and three-time.
I think y'all saying it for different reasons.
Yeah, you can't let everybody in. Or it's not the Hall of Fame anymore.
Yeah.
And so to me, and I don't want to be hard on Drew Pearson. I get it, but some of what you're seeing is like an entitlement of like, how dare you not put me in the Hall of Fame?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I thought that was for the millennials.
A lot of great players.
You make a good point about exclusivity, though, because we all know this. Lines create interest. You go to the Sunset Strip and you see a long line outside a nightclub, you're thinking, well, they got something figured out there, and that's why everybody wants in the Hall of Fame.
Except when you go in that club, ain't nobody in there.
Time now for the most frivolous discussion of the day. I want to return to the topic of black NFL head coaches and a trend in sports that may be limiting their rise, analytics. Yesterday, I read a story about the role of Browns chief strategy officer, Paul DePodesta, in the hiring of new coach, Kevin Stefanski. DePodesta is a proponent of analytics, which is basically using massive amounts of statistics and data to inform decision-making. Cleveland.com described DePodesta's thinking and football analytics this way. It's a way of thinking, a way of doing business, a way of ideally of winning. It's brain over gut, data over instincts. It's gathering information that assists in drafting players and calling plays and everything in between. It's being smart and open-minded and collaborative and adaptable, and it has spread around the NFL. Analytics spread first in Major League Baseball. It was originally called Sabermetrics, which is short for the Society for American Baseball Research. In the 1990s, the Oakland Athletics, under general manager Billy Beane, fully embraced sabermetrics and analytics. Analytics next moved to the NBA. Before he was the face of the NBA's China fiasco, Houston Rockets general manager Daryl Morey was the face of the league's analytics revolution. Football was the last sports to catch analytics fever. In 2016, the Cleveland Browns hired Billy Beane's assistant general manager, Paul DePodesta, to bring analytics and that wave to the NFL. The wave is here now. The NFL has embraced analytics. Among other things, it shapes NFL coaches' philosophy on fourth down decisions and two-point conversions. Decision-making in professional sports are heavily influenced by the embrace of analytics. Guess which group of people are seen as most resistant to analytics? Black people. Here's an excerpt from what my good friend Michael Wilbon wrote for The Undefeated in 2016. The mission was to find black folks who spend any time talking about advanced analytics, whose conversations are framed by or even casually include references to win shares or effective shooting percentage, whip, or points per possession. It's a failed mission so far, totally empty. Conclusion, advanced analytics and black folks hardly ever mix. Set aside the tiny handful of black men who make a living somewhere in the sports industry dealing with the numbers, there is absolutely zero mingling. Here's a clip of my good friend Charles Barkley talking about Daryl Morey and analytics in 2015.
I'm not worried about Daryl Morey. He's one of those idiots who believe in analytics. He went out and got James Harden and got Dwight Howard. They're going to tell me that's analytics. Then he went out and got Trevor Ariza. But then he went out and got Josh Smith. So first of all, I've always believed analytics was crap. And I never mentioned the Rockets as a legitimate contender because they're not.
From 2001 through 2014, the NBA averaged 11 black coaches. There are 6 black head coaches working in the NBA today. Analytics is about brains over guts. Your gut might tell you racism explains the dwindling number of black coaches in the NFL. The data might say it's our reluctance to jump on the analytics bandwagon. Analytics isn't going away. We can get with it or we can get left behind. All right, Marcellus, get us rolling. Woo. Is the NFL's embrace of analytics a factor in holding back black coaches?
No. I think if you chase analytics, you'll just be chasing the latest wave that tries to explain the lack of minority black coaches in the NFL. You guys remember all the waves? Let's start with what Bucky likes to highlight, the thinking positions. I remember it. Let's go back 30, 40 years, thinking positions, where it used to just be the safety and the linebacker and the center and the quarterback. White positions, because the black players not deemed as intelligent, perceived as intelligent as those white players in those thinking positions. So now let's talk about where we are today. I think two things are really at play here. Because if you chase the analytics, guess what? There was a time where we were chasing the young offensive coordinators, the quarterback coaches, the offensive quality control guys. Like, we continue to say, put yourself in those buckets, but they continue to move the bucket. Two things happened. One, when I retired, not too many brothers wanted to coach. I'm one. And a lot of my brothers like, nah, dog, not coaching. It's almost like how baseball is perceived at the high school level. Like, you're good at it, but what? I don't see the end in sight. How many years in the minors? How many teams? How many cities? And a lot of brothers was like, I'm not coaching. So there's a smaller pool of applicants when you talk about black coaches. If you talk about, especially in the buckets that exist right now, well, we got Byron Leftwich, Eric Bieniemy. How many guys really in those offensive positions? And the second thing is, if you really look at it, when you have that small pool and the guys are not doing exactly what they're poaching from, you're going to be in this situation where you have 3 black head coaches, which, crazy enough, is reflective of the population of black people in this country. Like, 13% of the coaches in NFL are black, and 13% of the people in this country are black. Until we change our cultural values or what we desire out of the game post-retirement, I think a lot more guys want to get into what I'm doing. Brothers love to talk it. But a lot of guys I don't see want to do the same thing and go through those rigors and that road to becoming black head coaches.
I think it does play a small part in why we haven't seen as many minority coaches. I think you have to kind of run it up the flagpole. The people that hire are your general managers. And so when you have an embrace of analytics at the highest level, most of those people come from, no disrespect to Ivy League, but Ivy League schools. Yeah. And much like you've seen baseball, where baseball has become very Ivy League heavy in those upper management positions, where you're not having a lot of people of color that are there. And I'm not saying it's a conscious effort to keep blacks out. However, if you go all the way back to the high school level, STEM, science, technology, and mathematics, you don't see a heavy population of blacks delving in those subjects. And so if you're going to be a part of the new trend, and the new trend says in sports, analytics are being a part, we have to populate the pipeline with those who are interested in math. And so because you don't have many who are delving in the numbers, you have a very, very small pool. So yes, it has played a part because we haven't actively participated in that avenue when it comes to finding jobs in sports.
Well, I mean, thank goodness all the championships Cleveland won. Paul D. Podesta was 1-15 when he took over in 16. He's 0-16 in 17, 7-8-1 in 18. Yeah, these analytics are really whipping ass in the NFL. I mean, the Cleveland Browns, for crying out loud. Listen, there are plenty of guys who would embrace analytics that are black that aren't getting opportunities. And there are plenty of guys who aren't embracing analytics that are white that are getting opportunities.
Boom.
Sorry about it. I mean, I think one of the big issues, and I think you touched on it, and I think it's true, the majority of, in my experience in the NFL, the majority of white coaches spend their time on the offensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And in this game where it's all about quarterbacking and offense, and that's become that, I mean, you get a young offensive coordinator, those are the guys they want to hire, and the majority of those guys happen to be white.
And I also think the majority that analytics has its biggest influence on the offensive side of football. And so, again, I want to be clear. The question is, does the NFL's embrace of analytics a factor in holding black coaches back? And so, does it explain it all? Absolutely not. But if the sports world is being overrun by analytics, it is across the board. Again, sabermetrics started in 1971 and then really took flight in baseball in the 1990s with the Oakland Athletics. And sabermetrics and analytics moved to basketball in the last 10, 15 years. And go look at what's happened with basketball coaches. Go look at the whole conversation. I talk to these guys in my spare time away from the show all the time about people upset, like, hey, man, we can't get head coaching jobs anymore. And they keep throwing this whole, if you're not an analytics guru. And so go look at the six NBA head coaches right now. Five of them are old school guys on their second or third rip. Lloyd Pierce is the only guy that's a first-time head coach. He's the coach of the Hawks. And guess what system he came out of? The 76ers and the process and the whole analytics. So he's put himself in that lane and gotten a job. The same thing, this analytics revolution is sweeping through the NFL, and if you can't talk that language or if it sounds completely foreign to you and you can't be a participant in the direction the whole organization is going, because everybody, like it or not, is moving that direction, it makes you a less appealing candidate than maybe a Kevin Stefanski or whoever can talk that talk.
You're absolutely right. And so here's what has to change. What has to change is the person of color, or whoever does this, is going to be the one that is at the forefront of the room. The person who embraces the data, the film, with a little bit of their own instincts, is going to be the one that goes to the front of the line. Because as you talk about the hiring, well, when you have a room full of people who are big believers in analytics, you have to be able to speak that language. Now, if you can take that language, use it the way that you see it, because we all delved in analytics as players. We called it tendencies. When we used to get the sheets, the scouting reports. What happened on third down?
Yes.
What routes did they run? What's the hot chart for the quarterbacks? Right. We've all dealt in analytics. It is now called analytics. Mm. Coaches have to be able to speak that language while still being an old school football coach. You have to meet them halfway so you can get an opportunity to do what you want to do.
Right. Yeah. One of the issues though is you can tell me about analytics of, you know, a guy's 40s times and vertical jumps and you can tell all that. You know, the dude's a coward, he can't play. I mean, that's the way it works. And so is there a place for analytics? Certainly there's a place. But some of these sports, baseball being one of them, has gone overboard. Mm-hmm. And we want to talk about analytics, and we want to talk about the Houston Astros that essentially got rid of all their scouting, right? And they're just doing it by the numbers with my Rapsodo reports and the spin rates and all the different things they're working on. Well, you know what was more poignant for them winning a championship? Yeah. Was their cheating analytics is what was more important. So, you know, the analytics, everything has its place. Everything has its place, but let's not think it's the end-all, be-all, because it's not.
Hell of a point. Mark Sun plays Major League Baseball.
Bingo. Yeah, I just think we're moving the goalposts once again. Like you said, Bucky, we could change the terminology, analytics, and then we had tendencies. But what's going to happen is if you want to chase that, it will change again in language. So as soon as you see analytics hit baseball, what happens? You see the rise of Latinos and you see the decline of blacks. Mm-hmm. And players, and then what are they going to poach their managers from? The pool, and that's going to look more brown than it's going to look black. And same thing in basketball. Now everyone's coming from Europe. There's a quarter of the league that is now European. I just say that you can't get caught up in the waves, because there's really just all of it is a mirage to something that we already know is a constant, which is just knowing the game.
Rich Ohrenberger and Bucky Brooks are back. Let's move to Seattle. Sponsored by ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. In my not so distant past, it looked like Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson were headed for a dynasty, But after another early exit from the playoffs, Wilson says the team is underachieving, and Seahawks Twitter is starting to turn against Carroll, who hasn't made it to an NFC Championship game since 2014. Marcellus, do you think the Carroll-Wilson combo is the smartest way to win?
Yeah, definitely. And man, like you said, it was almost dynastic. They won one play, one call away from winning two. And if you look at this team right now, I think they overachieved. Like, let's just go back to August and now look at this team that won a playoff game this year and went to the second round. Last year, they went to the first round. And this year, you have a MVP candidate for most of the season and your quarterback, Russell Wilson. But more importantly, you lost Chris Carson right before the postseason. That's a 1,200-plus yard rusher. And y'all act like y'all gonna do better? What were your expectations? Like, only one team wins, the rest have a story. And your story is you lost your rusher and things change. If Derrick Henry goes out, guess how that's gonna look? If Dalvin Cook is not there, guess how that looks? Like, they
Chris
lost.
Chris Carson ain't them guys.
I'm not saying he is in terms of talent, but I'm saying in terms of production for this offense to set up their play action, 12-30 in 16 games, 15 games, you still had another one to go?
Marshawn Lynch averaged 2 yards a carry.
Don't you do that.
That's the point.
That is the point. Beast mode you're talking about.
Stop it.
Hey, you know, look, yes, he's the right coach for Russell Wilson, and here's the reason why. Because he's been his coach the entire way. There's something to be said about consistency. We're in a culture where every day things change on us, and we're just getting used to that. Things don't have to change, especially good things. And what's happening in Seattle right now is a very good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we get all hot and bothered about playoff appearances without making a deep enough run. Isn't it great to make it to the playoffs? I mean, to a certain extent as a fan base, and every fan base at some point in their history has been guilty of this, you get a little spoiled. And then all of a sudden you think to yourself, geez, maybe we ought to make a change of coach. Yeah, that's right. We need to get rid of this coach. Russell Wilson needs one of these young guys. Well, bring him in and see what happens. Arguably, it's almost always worse before it's better, and sometimes it's just bad.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing about the Seattle Seahawks is I understand the fascination with everyone wants to put the ball in Russell Wilson's hands. But the reason they won the Super Bowl, where they went to two Super Bowls, is because they ran the ball in over 50% of the snaps in both of those years. They were the most run-heavy team in each of those seasons. He is at his best when the running game props him up and allows him to play off play action.
He was propped up like he needs a foot rest.
He does. He does need the running game.
Yeah.
He needs the running game because what happens, then they
as
play
as opposed
off
to other quarterbacks.
Most quarterbacks need that.
Okay.
Most quarterbacks need
he's not a superstar.
All need a running game.
They
need to a certain extent.
They need
the
running game.
Yeah.
Look, when they're running around and making plays, they're
Pat
chaotic.
Mahomes
they're off rhythm. Pat Mahomes.
Pat Mahomes.
We'll see how that plays out. But I think the big thing, this is a team that was not supposed to be in the postseason. We didn't think they were going to make an 11-5 run and compete for winning the NFC West.
Dang.
Pete Carroll has done a great job of taking whatever he has had and put it together and done it. The wins speak for themselves.
Let me reluctantly speak for Seahawks Twitter. I rarely speak for Twitter, but I'm going to. I think what they're reflecting is they actually watched Seattle get to 11 regular season victories. And they know that it was razor thin, that this could have been a 7-9 football team. They know that Seattle ended the season, I think, with a +7 point differential. That should have been an 8-8, 9-7 football team. And so what they're saying is, and what we don't seem to believe here amongst this group, is like they think Russell Wilson is the highest paid quarterback in football because he deserves to be, because he's that good. And we need to put more of this offense on Russell Wilson and open it up. And Pete Carroll's not the coach to ever do that.
Well, the thing is, one thing I love about my favorite sport, track, is it's the purest meritocracy in sports. When you leave a track event, you go in the stands, there's only two questions. What place you get and what was your time? Because that's objective. But in football, when you lose, they say, oh, what happened? Here we go with the conjecture and the story. Well, it's coach tripping. Oh, he should have ran the ball. He should have passed it more. How about y'all not good enough? It's okay, Seattle. Like, right now, your team is damn good. You won 11 games, but you lost your rushing attack, and you walked in the playoffs one-dimensional and got exposed in the second round, which is an advancement from last year. Can you take these growing?
But here's what I would say about track and field and football. There's a football's far more interesting. because of all the different variables. Seriously, all,
have you watched
all
the different, when there's somebody
all
rolling?
All the different variables and blah, blah. There's more to discuss. There's more to nitpick. There's
more to make up, more to story, absolutely, more conjecture.
But I just don't think these Seahawks fans are crazy for like, hey, man, we got the highest paid player.
But here's what's funny about them. The more you give Russell Wilson, the worse the team performs.
Hello.
2 years ago, he had his best individual season. The team was 6-10.
And they're saying that's 2 years
ago.
6-10.
They're looking
6-10. You're looking in the rearview mirror. They're looking through the windshield.
But I mean, look in the rearview mirror, but look just in the short distance, or I should say the short past. Russell Wilson was on his way to an MVP season before he wasn't. You know what I'm saying?
Like
this guy.
And they say I hate on him.
This guy. No. This guy is playing great football right now. And Pete Carroll is a great football coach. I think everybody's anxious to make changes. And on the other side of change, guess what? That grass is not always greener. That's my caution here.
And only in Green Bay did the grass get greener when they moved on from Mike McCarthy to Matt LaFleur. God, I know.
And less of Aaron Rodgers.
We'll see. We'll see how that looks.
Handed off.
Yeah, what evidence? What evidence?
They won 13 games, Bucky.
They did, but they need to win 14. 10 of those wins were against teams that were 500 or less.
Ooh.
Oh, I'm sorry. They should have played people not on their schedule.
I'm just saying. We'll see if it's better because Mike McCarthy won the Super Bowl.
They won 13 games. They won 7 more games than a year ago.
Can I get evidence of this team, the Seahawks, being better when Russell was at his best, and they're putting it all on his shoulders?
The second half of last week's game. To me, watch the second half of last week's game.
What, they lost.
I know, but they turned it over to us.
If you look at
the paper. We got to go. Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval ratings for Odell Beckham Jr. All right, but first, who's your big dummy of the day?
Leaning.
What's wrong with your neck, man?
You got to protect your neck.
Hey, man, big dummy of the day go to the person that's going to tell Drew Pearson, legend.
Oh.
Hey, man, you've been sitting on the bus stop so long, you might want to get up and start walking. You do know that brother's 70 years old, right?
Been waiting 35 to get in the Hall of Fame. Let it go.
He ain't going to make it to the next bus stop.
All right. Let's talk Odell Beckham Jr., whose national championship antics have landed him in hot water. An arrest warrant has been issued after video surfaced of OBJ slapping a security guard on the backside in the LSU locker room. All right, Marcel, do you think anything will come of this?
Yeah, I think actually through this process, if LSU is hit heavy with a fine or sanctions from the NCAA, Odell is facing a $1,000 fine and up to 6 months in jail. They might put him behind bars just to make a statement.
Watch out, I don't see it going that far, but I think they're just trying to shake him up so they can have a conversation with him. Mm. But Uncle Jimmy, we're going to go serious with Uncle Jimmy. No jokes today. Uncle Jimmy, 17 years in law enforcement in Kansas City, wanted your take on this OBJ locker room fiasco.
When this video first surfaced, did I or did I not tell you, they gonna charge his ass?
You did say
literally
that.
His ass.
Literally.
He charged their ass first, so.
Look, man, let's get something established. Right is right, wrong is wrong, and it ain't no in the middle. Okay? Let's just do that.
No jokes.
No jokes. Listen to what I'm trying to say. And I'm very serious. When I saw that, remember Russell Westbrook, when the little boy touched him playing basketball?
Yeah.
And Russell Westbrook told that kid's father in no uncertain terms what he would do to him and his wife if that kid ever touched him while he was working. Am I right?
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Remember during the NBA playoffs last year, Kyle Lowry got pushed by a fan. We went ballistic. The fan was banned for life. Come to find out that he was an owner, but he was still fined and suspended. Now, we can defend these millionaire athletes, but I guess the law enforcement officer making $40,000 a year, he ain't got no rights when he's doing his job. Only the millionaires are protected, right?
You make a point.
No, I mean, I'm just asking y'all quick. 2 years ago, wasn't I that security guard?
Yes, you were.
Okay, so you telling me that Odell Beckham Jr., his millionaire dollars is better than my $40,000. Guess what? There's more people in America right now making $40,000, $50,000 than is making $1 million.
No question about
that. Okay, so therefore, them people understand far more what life is about than what Odell Beckham Jr. is about. See, my problem with not just Odell Beckham Jr., it also goes to Antonio Brown. Okay? We done had two videos surface, and both of these videos show the same thing. A total lack of respect for oneself, and definitely no respect for law enforcement. And if you ain't got no respect for yourself, you ain't gonna have respect for nobody else, let alone law enforcement.
That's real.
Okay? But then soon as something go wrong, who you calling? The little $50,000 man. And I'm supposed to feel sorry for you.
Yeah.
Huh?
Not bad.
Don't get quiet.
Jimmy.
I mean, let's go.
You want a response?
Hey, he didn't say anything in the moment. He got Rolls Royce rear-ended. That means he was like, boom, nothing. Turned around. Oh, it was a Rolls Royce. Ouch. Catch that one now. Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Rolls Royce rear-ended.
Yeah.
OBJ is a complete dumpster fire.
It's OBJ.
35. Uh-oh. 5 in job performance, 14 all-time greatness, 6 character, 10 authenticity, 35 dumpster fire.
Said he knew when it was OBJ, it was time to press charges. Not before. Okay, I give you all downgrades except in authenticity. You let us know how you really feel, even if you went too far with OBJ.
I wish that would have been me. I would have pepper sprayed that whole
Here you go. Here you go. Oh, you the one.
Internet has him as a dumpster fire as well, 69%.